Alrighty. I get to observe so many things throughout the week. It's just so entertaining to me. And sometimes people don't like some of the recommendations. But you know what? We have to deal with the reality of what's going to help restore our health. One of the things that I hear women make the comment about is about their skin health. I want to read this to you right here. Okay, I'm not trying to make a joke here. Okay. March 28th, 2007, the BBC broadcast a documentary on the cosmetics industry in which they interviewed Dr. Chris Griffiths, a dermatologist at Manchester University. The doctor just casually mentioned that there was a commercial women's skin cream on the market. It was called Boots No. 7. That was able to reverse sun-inflicted skin damage. The very next day, sales skyrocketed by 2,000%. Women cleared the shelves and the company's web store ran out. Rationing was introduced. You know what rationing is. Everybody wants the product or the food or the substance, and you got to dole it out to make sure everybody gets a chance at it. The cream itself, Boots No. 7, guess what it contained? Vitamin A. Okay? But vitamin A will not just give you great skin. You got to have it. All the linings of the bodies require vitamin A. A lot of times if I give vitamin A to a patient, they'll tell me, oh my goodness, I feel amazing. Because what it does is it repairs the lining of the gut. You have to have a healthy lining of your gut or your gut membrane. Have you ever heard the term leaky gut syndrome or hyperpermeable gut? Yeah, well, without vitamin A, it becomes real brittle and weak. Well, besides giving you great skin, one of the things it gives you is a great brain. Let me read this to you. It was in the year 1998 that researchers at the Salk Institute for Biological Studies, San Diego, not only discovered that vitamin A promotes learning, but they found that the region of the brain where vitamin A receptors are located. To me, this is fascinating. Guess what it's called? It's called the hippocampus. Hippocampus is kind of important, folks. This is where short-term memory takes place. If I'm not mistaken, when a physician orders an MRI of a patient's brain, especially an elderly one, they're trying to measure and compare the size and the shape of the hippocampus of those that have dementia or Alzheimer's with those that have great memories. And as a general rule, you're going to find the hippocampus is significantly atrophied or shrunken. It's smaller when somebody has memory loss, as in dementia and Alzheimer's. So back to the hippocampus. The hippocampus is where this particular vitamin, vitamin A, it stimulates the synapses involved with learning. Okay? Currently, there's millions of children worldwide that are thought to be deficient in vitamin A. Is that going to affect their learning? Yes. Now, listen to this right here. Researchers at the University of Bordeaux in France, they looked at the effects of vitamin A deprivation and subsequent reintroduction in rats. Okay, so what they're saying basically is, we're going to take vitamin A away from the rats to see what happens to their brain or their hippocampus, and then we're going to reintroduce it later to see what happens. And so they found that vitamin A-deprived rats, they produced 32% fewer new cells in the hippocampus than those fed adequate amounts of vitamin A. Are you with me? Okay, the deprived rats, they also did much less well than the control group in the practical test. What they had to do is they had to find an underwater platform in a swimming test in order to find a way to not have to swim so long. They could take a break, but they had this clear plastic underwater platform. If they could find it, well, that was like a prize. Well, the ones that were low in vitamin A, it took them 25% longer to succeed, okay? That's like saying when you're at your job, you want to take 25% longer to be successful at doing your work. Could you imagine if you were a school teacher? It takes you 25% longer to get your point across to the students Or what if you're a student in the classroom? It could take you 25% longer to figure out what the teacher's trying to say before you go, aha, now I get it. Which there are some classes that I had in school that I wondered, was I low in vitamin A during that math class? The calculus? Okay. The clincher was, of course, what happened when vitamin A was added back to the rats. This is interesting right here. When the rats were deprived of vitamin A and they tested them to see how quickly they could find the underwater platform, and they figured out, hey, it's taking them a lot longer, what they did was they put vitamin A back in the diet. Now, just a normal amount. They didn't give them extra. So this is interesting. So after 4 weeks of reintroducing the vitamin A, bingo, they outperformed the control group of the normal diets. Not only did their performance improve, but when examined, the rate at which new neurons were being made exceeded the normal rate. It's as if they were compensating from having a deprivation of vitamin A. Now that, to me, is interesting. I remember a long time ago, this would have been probably close to 20 years, I took the kids to a water park. And I think I've told this story once before, but I had a daughter one day that decided that she wanted to go wild on mangoes. And you know, mango would probably be the equivalent of apples here in America, but mangoes would be the apple equivalent in South America or in a more tropical equatorial part of the world. But she just wanted to eat mango after mango. She just couldn't get enough. Well, of course, you know, that's just the way it is. Sometimes your body has a way of telling you the very thing that you need. And so one thing that mangoes would contain, it would have beta-carotene or carotenoids, which is pro-vitamin A. I can't even remember how many she ate that day. Maybe it was 4 or 5, but I just kind of thought, man, she just can't get her fix of the mangoes. But when we went to the water park, she was the only one in the group that had no sun damage. There was no burning of her skin. She wore no sunscreen. Maybe I was a bad father. I didn't cover her with it. I don't know. But she didn't get sunburn. But now that I look back, it's because she had an extraordinary amount of the carotenoids and the vitamin A that was very protective against the damage from the sun. And so now you can look at that. Well, anyway, just very quickly here, it doesn't say it on this chart, but roasted chicken has 5 micrograms of vitamin A, which means it has practically none. Tuna fish in a 3-ounce can of tuna fish has 20 micrograms of vitamin A, which is very low. Salmon that is poached, 3 ounces, is 59. That's not very much. A boiled egg is 75. That's not a lot. Now, when you start looking at stuff like raw grated carrots or a raw carrot, it says 0.9 ounces. That's 25 grams. They had 459 micrograms of vitamin A, so that jumps up quite a bit. If you had 4 ounces of boiled spinach, which is a whole lot more than an ounce of carrots, you get to 573. What if you had a medium sweet potato? Well, that has 960 micrograms, but get this right here. On this chart, they say, they don't say calf liver or beef liver, they say ox liver. But 3 ounces of ox liver is 6,582 micrograms of vitamin A. And so what's the takeaway right now? And obviously I'm not trying to overpromise something to you, but if you believe what I just told you about the vitamin A protecting the hippocampus and causing the hippocampus in your brain to be able to do its job by growing brand new baby neurons and nerve cells, well, maybe vitamin A is one of the things that you're lacking. You know, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 50 years, maybe 60, that it was common for a young mother to provide her kids liver and onions once a week. I realize those days are gone. You know, I listened to a woman yesterday, and she was telling me, I'll just say this, she lives with her daughter. And she was telling me that when she would wake up in the morning, she would listen to the grandkids talk about eating breakfast, and the kids didn't eat breakfast. No. Breakfast wasn't provided for them, so they were left to themselves. So they just snacked on crackers and Pop-Tarts, Doritos, Cheetos, stuff like that. Well, that's not real food. So what do you do when the kids are left to their own devices? Well, you're going to get some behavior that might be less than ideal. So when a child is young, this is when their brain is growing and developing pretty quickly. Give the kids what they need. You know, there's a reason why. It's well known that eggs are so good for a child's brain because they have quite a bit of vitamin A. Now, I don't know this to be true because I haven't looked it up, but I sure thought about doing a literature search. I wondered about testing against dementia and Alzheimer's against vitamin A deficiency. I'm going to see what I come up with. Of course, you know another superfood? Superfoods are foods that historically they give you so much nutrition and they have so much great value that you're thinking, well, why doesn't everybody take these? Well, like I've told you in the past, I love the American Heart Association recommendation for somebody to prevent a heart attack or heart problems to eat ocean fish twice a week. So the idea of having a salmon fillet twice a week, that's actually a very, very good idea. I did not say that I like the rest of the recommendations, but I do like that one very much, so you want to give them credit. So what do you get when you eat salmon? Well, number one, you get the good omega-3 fatty acids. And these are types of fats that your body cannot make. You've got to get it from the food that you eat. So if you don't provide it through food, you're going to have to do without. Omega-3 fatty acids. You talk about a way to rejuvenate the brain and all the nerves in the body. There's a lot of people out there, their nerves are literally dying in their legs. They have severe neuropathy. Now, the doctor may say this is because you have an autoimmune disease, but that still doesn't diminish the body's needs and requirements for essential fatty acids. So if you have nerves that are dying in your legs, and you're not consuming ocean fish frequently, and all you're doing is loading up with trans fatty acids and vegetable oils like soybean oil and corn oil and cottonseed oil, well, you're kind of asking for problems. You know, it's been shown and demonstrated over and over again that if you want the brain to repair, good oils like from olive oil and avocados and cod and salmon, flounder, halibut, what else is another one? Mahi-mahi. I love haddock. Haddock to me is one of the most delicious, deep, cold ocean water fishes on the planet. There's other ones out there that people tell me about, and I'm going, man, this is great. Now, I tend to steer away from things like tilapia and catfish. And folks, it's just the way it is. If you don't avoid fish that are raised on hormones and antibiotics, guess what you're going to put in your body? I promise you, you do not need to get an extra helping and serving of antibiotics and hormones in your system. That creates a huge burden. I think I've told you before that when I read that report, I want to say it was from the municipality of Arlington, Texas, where they looked at the sewage or the water treatment plants, you know, where they try to recycle the water. Well, if human beings have been prescribed hormone replacement therapy, and they've also been prescribed antibiotics to treat, say, double pneumonia, which is warranted, well, guess what happens when they go to the bathroom? They will pass the antibiotic residue from their body into the toilet. The same is true for the hormones. And so when that goes into the water treatment plant, guess what you got? You can't get rid of it. They cannot remove the prescription drugs, which it really begs the question, should you be drinking tap water? Well, I say you should not. You're so much better off by drinking water that comes from a spring somewhere. I know that there's no such thing as a Garden of Eden any longer. It was here at one point in time. Now, it is not the case. So you've got to find a way to put clean water in your body. So if you make a concerted effort to feed your mother or your father that's aging fish 2, 3, 4 times a week, I'm telling you, that's a good call. But if you want to rejuvenate dead, damaged nerves, you've got to have cod liver oil. And guess what cod liver oil has? It has vitamin A. Fish oils are one of the richest natural sources of vitamin A. For example, and I'm looking at a chart here, just 1 teaspoon of cod liver oil contains 1,350 micrograms. That's kind of over twice the recommended daily intake for women, and twice that for men. It's like a home run. And you always think, when it comes to rejuvenation of the brain and the nervous system, how are you going to do that without omega-3 fatty acids? Well, the answer is, you're not. Okay? Here's the other thing that I was thinking about this morning. I saw this on 2 different days, and it was 2 different women, and of course, I'm not trying to be judgmental. It's just an observation, but I looked out the window at my office, and I saw a young mother get out of her car, and she walked around to the side, and she pulled a baby out, out of the car seat, which is appropriate to carry a child in a buckled-in, secure, rear-facing child seat. But the baby couldn't have been more than a week old. I mean, it was a newborn. I mean, yes, maybe it was 2 weeks old, but I couldn't miss it by much. I've seen a bunch of newborn babies. I ought to be able to tell. But she was going in to buy a vaping device. And I know that was it because what they usually do is they rip the box open and they throw the box in the parking lot. I don't think many people actually use the trash can anymore. They just throw it directly into the parking lot to dispose of the cardboard box and the wrapper that it comes in. And I know it was a vaping device because I saw the cloud of smoke that came out. And I thought to myself, has anybody told her what nicotine does to babies? Anyway, let me share this to you right here, or share this with you. To me, this is, and I know this could be negative or it could be positive. You have to understand, health sometimes is a little bit complicated, but you got to have faith in God's design. If you eat real food that God has made versus artificial food, by the way, Cheetos aren't real, that's fake. Doritos, those aren't real either, those are fake. Now, carrots are real. And a salmon fillet is real. Broccoli and potatoes, those are real. So let me share this with you right here. This comes from a study from Florida State University. Exposure of mothers to nicotine and other components of cigarette smoke and or a vaping device, it's recognized now as a significant risk factor for behavioral disorders, including attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or ADHD. And the thing of it is, it can affect many generations. Now, what they did was, they wanted to study whether the same principle, not a mother, but if it applies to a father. So researchers at Florida State University in Tallahassee, what they did was they exposed male mice to low-dose nicotine, not high-dose, but low-dose, and they put in their drinking water. And they wanted to find out during which stage of life, or during the stage of life in which the mice could produce sperm so they could have offspring. So what they did was they bred these male mice that were given the low-dose nicotine with females that had never been exposed to nicotine. So you see where they're coming from. Instead of always kind of putting the onus on the woman, all they did was they gave low-dose nicotine, not tobacco smoke, but nicotine, to male father mice. While the fathers behaved normally, both sexes of offspring displayed hyperactivity. Oh my goodness, is hyperactivity an all-time high? Yes. So they had the offspring, they had hyperactivity, attention deficit, cognitive inflexibility. Oh my goodness, that doesn't sound good to be inflexible. What you want to do is you want to be flexible and adaptable and well-balanced. You don't want to fly off the handle when things don't go your way. Now, when the female, but not the male mice from this generation were bred with males never exposed to nicotine, the male offspring displayed fewer, but still significant deficits in cognitive flexibility. Analysis of the spermatozoa from the original nicotine-exposed mice, they indicated that multiple genes had been affects dopamine. Dopamine has so much to do with you wanting to be balanced and social. And so when you have your dopamine is messed up a bit, you have a hard time getting along with others. Anyway, well, this is the next study right here. This is on human beings. And they're saying, instead of looking at the mothers that use nicotine or the fathers that have intake of nicotine, what about grandparents that smoke cigarettes? What does that do on the offspring of their grandchildren? Well, we have a study on that too. After analyzing data from more than 14,500 children born in the United Kingdom during the 1990s, epidemiologists from the University of Bristol, they found that people with a maternal grandmother who smoked during her pregnancy, that means her grandmother, okay, they had a 53% increased risk of developing autism. Oh, to me, that's so fascinating. Even if the mother does everything right, well, what if her mother smoked while she was developed in the womb, or she was growing in her mother's womb? 53% increased risk of autism. To me, this is like criminal. If this information was widely known, what do you think should happen here? I mean, cigarettes are widely available. I watched a man the other day buy 10 cans, I think, of Skoal, and I want to say it cost $75. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I couldn't believe it. The study also revealed that girls whose maternal grandmother smoked during pregnancy, they were 67% more likely to have autism-linked traits. Folks, autism is on the rise. It is not on the decline. It can be on the decline. Maybe if we start eating real foods that contain vitamin A. Okay? That could be everything from salmon to getting good, high-quality a teaspoon of fish oil a day. You know, that there was a time in an era where mothers would line their kids up and give each one of their children a small spoonful of cod liver oil every day because they thought and they knew that it gave them the greatest chance to produce babies and children that were healthy and strong. I don't know if that's really going on today, but this is very interesting. Now, this right here is another one that gets me because everybody says marijuana is not harmful. And I realize marijuana's probably got some positives, but it's got some negatives too. Here it is right here. Duke University researchers have proven this belief that marijuana is benign and it's not less harmful than alcohol. So they analyzed the differences between the sperm of males who smoked or ingested marijuana compared to a control group with no such experience. What they found was a significant hypomethylation in sperm of men who used marijuana compared to controls. And that's at a gene that's been strongly implicated in both autism, schizophrenia, and post-traumatic stress disorder. You know, there's a lot of people that suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder. Some of them has been because they have been exposed to a severe, excessive amount of stress and trauma. That's true. But there's some people, they really weren't exposed to all that, but they still have PTSD very severely. It makes me wonder if the mother or the father consume marijuana or cigarettes. Okay? I'm looking at the clock. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open. 903-586-5257. What are a couple of the takeaways so far? If you can find a way to feed and nourish your body where you don't need marijuana or tobacco or nicotine. That's what you want. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If nobody calls, I've got a study I want to read to you. This one to me is very interesting. Researchers divided 84 hotel maids in New York City into two groups. Get this. One group was told, this is all it was, they were told that the work that they do on their job is really good exercise, and it totally satisfies the Surgeon General's recommendations for an active lifestyle. So what do they have with that? They're going, oh my goodness, our job, or the job that I have every day is a hotel maid. It's really great exercise. It's good for me. It makes the Surgeon General happy. Oh my goodness, I'm so thankful for it. And so this information was really given as the equivalent of the placebo. Okay. The other group, or the control group, was not given this information. It's just as simple as that. Actually, we'll come back to that just momentarily. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Hey, thanks for turning your radio off. Good morning.
Yes. I want you to tell me, how can you tell if you're iodine deficient?
Well, I have a screening test for you. What you do is you get a solution of 2% iodine. You can get that at probably any drugstore, pharmacy, large store that carries pharmaceutical products. It's the type of iodine that you would rub on a scrape or a scratch, or if you've had an injury, to prevent infection. Okay. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, sir, I do.
Now, under normal circumstances... But under normal circumstances, iodine... it comes in a clear form, but to make sure somebody knows that it's iodine, they put a dye in it to make sure that, you know, that it's monkey blood. Don't consume it. Don't drink it. They make it look weird. But when you rub it on the skin, it's going to have kind of a brown, orange, yellow color to it. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Okay. So it's called the iodine screening test. And so what you would do is you just take a patch of skin, and like right now I'm looking at my left forearm on the palm side of my hand. If you took that little bitty plastic applicating wand after you dip it in the iodine and just rub it on your skin, let's say you kind of make a circle or a square or a triangle or draw a happy face, whatever you want with the iodine, you just let it dry. And it may take 20, 30 seconds for the iodine to dry where it doesn't touch your clothing. And you leave it on there. So if you did it exactly right now, say 7:27 a.m., just write a note down. But what you're looking for is you want to see exactly how long that iodine remains. And so if you wake up tomorrow morning and you look at the clock and say, oh, my word, it's Sunday morning, 7:27. Let me look at the iodine patch that I just painted on there. If it's still there, it looks identical to the way it did the day before, that usually signifies that you got a great amount of iodine. You're doing great.
Oh, okay.
But you know what the opposite of that is? What if you look at this 2 hours later and you say, wait a second, that was a lot darker 2 hours ago. It looks like it's about, it's like it's lightened up a whole bunch. So that's an idea. And so here's the principle. When you're low in iodine, basically your body is starving for it.
Okay.
And when your body's starving for it, it's going to scarf it down any way that it can get it.
Okay.
And so some people tell me they feel so much better when they eat seafood, and I'm going, well, I wonder if it's because their body is desperate for iodine.
Hmm.
So if it completely disappears, you know, after 4 hours or 6 hours or 10 hours, what that strongly suggests to you is you have a tremendous deficiency in iodine. That's another reason why kelp has always been a superfood, because it's rich in iodine.
Well, I'm making a shrimp dish today, but I don't eat much seafood. Is there a vitamin that will help?
Yeah, you can easily. One of the most famous ones that's been around for over 100 years is called Lugol's solution.
Lugols,
I think. Lugols. Yeah, I think you got it right. Lugols. And so that's one form. But you can also, you can get iodine in the form of kelp. They can use, what's the stuff called? It's either sea moss or it's called bladder wrack. You ever heard of bladder wrack? That's a source of iodine also. Historically, if a woman doesn't have a great thyroid or a performance of her thyroid, she would be given kelp or bladder wrack to see if there's a huge surge or improvement in her mood and how she functions, the quality of her hair, the skin, energy production, making depression disappear and go away. But yeah, probably the form of iodine that I use more than any other is called prolamine iodine.
Prolamine, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a food source. Yeah, it comes in like a capsule.
Okay.
Which, to me, can I tell you one thing that I find interesting? The lowest.
You can tell me anything.
Oh, thanks. The lowest level of breast cancer in women, and then prostate cancer, which is the equivalent of breast cancer in men, is going to be found in the year 1999, Okinawa, Japan. And I think they average about 12 milligrams of iodine intake when they eat food from the sea. So when when you eat ocean fish, you're really doing yourself a favor. Besides the omega-3 fatty acids I was just referring to a while ago, you're getting some good iodine.
Thank you. Well, I had my thyroid radiated years ago, and I take a supplement to replace that. I think it's levothyroxine.
Yeah, levothyroxine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. So would that make me need iodine that I have?
Well, they got some iodine in it, but let me say it a different way. And what I was referring to by mentioning that Okinawa study is besides the thyroid, there are other tissues in the female body that require iodine. One of them is your skin. The other one is the breast, the female breast. It requires a certain amount of iodine to maintain its health. And so, as an example, if a woman is really low in iodine, she would notice that her breasts would be more prone to being tender and fibrocystic and even having cyst formation. Just like if a woman had cyst forming all over her ovaries, you would start to think, okay, is this woman getting enough iodine to meet her basic needs? Because what you have is, when there's a lack of iodine, cysts, they form so much more easily compared to women that get plenty of iodine. Does that make sense?
Yes, and I've always been told when I have a breast exam, I have a fibrous breast.
And, well, I would still say this might speak volumes about your need for iodine.
Okay. I will certainly try that. Thank you so much.
Well, tell me real quick, are you planning on going and fishing in Antarctica later today?
Not today, maybe tomorrow.
All right. Let me know what you catch.
how many times a week are you supposed to eat fish to be healthy or seafood?
Oh, man. It depends. If somebody is really run down, exhausted, they've been sick, I might do it every day if they're willing to do it.
Well,
and you know what? The thing of it is, it helps if you find a fish that you like. Some people, they look at fish, and they just almost violently want to vomit and throw up. Now, that's not me, but some people are that way. But fish, hey, it's raised without antibiotics, and it's raised without hormones.
Well, I always knew catfish was the not the best you could eat. But I thought tilapia was really, really good for you. But you said something negative about
tilapia. Well, I don't mean to be negative. It can be raised in a really clean environment. But if the owner of the fish farm wants to feed it pellets that are filled with hormones and antibiotics, then you're at the mercy of the fish farmer. So I'm not trying to say that tilapia is bad, but if you raised it in your own pond or you grew it in your swimming pool.
No. I live on Lake Palestine, but I don't catch any tilapia.
You know what? I'm curious. I'm curious if there's any tilapia in Lake Palestine.
Oh, I wish there were. They're a tasty fish.
Those guys are so aggressive. They grow so fast. I can tell you, when I was young, Jeff, I shouldn't say his last name, I'll say capital D, from over near Athens, he and I would go bow fishing over at Richland Chambers, and we could just shoot all the tilapia that we wanted to. It was amazing.
Wow.
And they are so fast and so skittish, you got to really sneak up on them. I'm sorry, Jeff.
So
I was just
raised...
a much better shot than you. Anyway.
So those were raised in a healthy way. They were good for you to eat.
Well, any time that you can raise fish without pumping them full of antibiotics,
yeah.
that's always...
Yeah.
If you can... And the thing of it is, what do you want? You want fish so healthy and so strong that they don't need antibiotics to keep them going. I can tell you for most fish what that would look like. When they get to eat June bugs that land on the water, and crickets,
mm-hmm.
and they get to eat worms, and they eat all sorts of other fish, that's when they're radiant and healthy.
If you were going to buy fish and you had your choices of the three main grocery stores available to me in Tyler, I think the one that starts with an A, Aldi's,
mm-hmm.
has the best brands of
Yeah, a lot
fish.
Of people tell me that. And you're just looking on yeah. the label to see if it says wild caught. If it says wild caught,
okay.
you're good to go.
That's what I'm trying to look for. Okay,
yeah.
wild caught.
Now, I'm glad you didn't ask the other question, because if mm-hmm. you asked me specifically where I go for my fish and what fish I buy, I'm mm-hmm. really reluctant to tell you, because usually when I say stuff like this, all the fish disappear from that store, and I've got to be a little selfish and think about myself, right?
You sure do, and your family. Yes. Well, God bless you.
God
Thank
bless you.
You. So
Thank you so much for your phone call. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, so what you can do is you can do that iodine patch test. I know there's a test called the iodine loading test where you try to load up with iodine and see how much goes passed out through the urine. But I think the iodine patch test where you just paint it on a patch of your skin, maybe not your forehead, but you're just trying to find out how long does it take before it disappears and goes away. And you know what? The thing of it is, probably most people are very deficient in iodine. I know this, it's easy to get really sick and catch everything that comes along when you're low in iodine. And so iodine is very, very useful, but probably even more so than that, it's so extremely useful for brain development. It's just amazing. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. Okay, where was that article I was just looking at? Because I thought that was a good one. I think I've already lost it. Who knows? Oh, yeah, this is it right here. Okay. Well, I'm looking at the phone line. Rats. I think I just missed a phone call. 903-586-5257. Okay, back to these hotel maids. Their responsibility was to maintain the sanitary conditions of the room. They would change the sheets. They would organize, clean up, all sorts of beneficial work. But they were told that the work that they're doing is so good for them, and it's a great exercise. Now, the other group, the control group, they weren't told anything. And so here's what I want you to consider and think about. One group was told that their work was really good for them. Another one wasn't told anything. Okay. And they noted that although the actual behavior didn't change in the two groups of housemaids, 4 weeks after the start of the experiment, the informed group, they perceive themselves as getting significantly more exercise than before. Isn't that interesting? Now, compared to the control group, the ones that thought they were doing great exercise and doing their work, they showed a decrease in weight. Okay? Their blood pressure went down. They had much less body fat. And you know what they had? They just had the belief that what they were doing was good. That's all they had. Isn't that something? Their waist-to-hip ratio improved, and their body mass index, it went down. All those are signs of the body functioning better and more efficiently, and the risk of having a sickness went down too. Now, the women in the experimental group, they did not work harder than the controls. but it was their belief system that actually changed the way their bodies functioned. Isn't that interesting? Oh my goodness. Okay, here's another one right here. This one I find so interesting also. There's a researcher and his team at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. His name is Robert H. Yolken, Y-O-L-K-E-N, Yolken. And here's what they're doing. They're doing research on what's called mania. And you've heard of somebody having bipolar disorder, or you have been around people that their bizarre behavior was just out of the ordinary, and you thought to yourself, something is wrong here. What's not right? And so this is what they're observing. And so Dr. Yolken and his researchers at Johns Hopkins, they observe that during manic episodes, many patients, they register elevated levels of cytokines. And these are molecules that are secreted by immune cells in response to perceived danger. He then prescribed 33 mania patients who had previously been diagnosed with a manic episode a probiotic prophylactically. You know what that means? He said, okay, these 33 people, they've had pretty severe episodes of mania. They've had some outbursts. They've had some maybe behavior and issues that have been a little bit unpleasant to endure. What we're going to do is we're going to prophylactically give them a probiotic. You know what a probiotic is? A probiotic can easily be a cultured bacteria like Lactobacillus acidophilus or Bifidobacterium, to name a few. Or maybe lactic acid yeast or Saccharomyces boulardii. Those are probably three or four that we could talk about. So they gave it to them, and here's what happened. These patients that took the prophylactic probiotic, they proved 75% less likely to develop another manic attack compared with patients who didn't take the probiotic. I don't know what you think about that, but that is huge. That is incredible. Does that start to show you the power of the gut as it's connected to the brain? I kind of had a patient that I thought he was very funny. We were talking about the brain, and then the second brain, which is the gut. And he said, well, I think the gut might be the first brain, and your regular brain is your second brain, and I thought that was funny. I'm going, yeah, you're right. It controls a lot, doesn't it? But isn't that interesting to know that if you consume a probiotic, if you had mania, you could greatly reduce, because the beneficial microbes, they start going to work doing their job that God designed them to do. And before I go any further, let me just say this right here. You're probably wondering, well, what can I do to get probiotics? Well, one of the tried and true methods has been around for, I don't know, 15,000 years, is just consuming fermented foods. And so, for example, if you've ever made chicken salad or tuna fish salad, I tell you, one of the things I like to add to it is just pickles. They're so easy. If you want to today, you could go to any health food store or natural grocery store, but you would go to the refrigerated section, and you would look for pickles, whether it's bread and butter pickles or dill pickles or baby pickles, whatever they're called. But you're looking for those pickles that are found in the refrigerated section. That means they have not been pasteurized and cooked. So when you get them in the refrigerated form, it's almost like you're buying the raw sauerkraut. Okay? It has all the beneficial microbes that are found in nature that are used to ferment the pickles and make them extra delicious. Well, you could add that if you're making chicken salad for your lunch today. You sure could. But you're finding a way to get a consistent dose of beneficial microbes and bacteria. I can tell you some of the problems that I see all the time. With the modern American diet and with fast food being such low quality, not enough nutrients, it's going to be really, really easy to have an overgrowth of things like candida and different forms of fungus and even mold in the body. And so what you want is, now this is a stretch, so cut me some slack here. In the book of Romans, it says, do not be overcome by evil, but rather overcome evil with good. I know this is just my analogy, but you've got to get the enough good, friendly bacteria to set up shop in the body. What you want is you want every square inch of real estate in your body where bacteria are supposed to live. You want that real estate covered by good, beneficial bacteria. Because what do good, beneficial bacteria do? They help rid the body of inflammation. And so, that study by Dr. Yalkin, he showed specifically when somebody has a manic episode, it's because their immune system is generating way, way, way too much inflammation. And you know what? There's a lot of things that can do that. Emotional stress can be one of those triggers. But if the lining of your gut is not in great working order and it's not healthy, oh, those effects are going to be exacerbated tenfold and they're going to be so much more worse. So isn't it like a genius plan where he gave them beneficial bacteria and it greatly reduced the manic episodes? You know, I think I mentioned this earlier this morning. I listen to people's comments because I think it's so interesting to learn what their experience is. But I had a woman tell me this week when she would take vitamin A in the form of a supplement, she would tell me, she said, I can't even begin to explain how good I feel now. Well, this morning when I read the article about the hippocampus, and the hippocampus is a structure in your brain, but that's one of the places where short-term memory is kind of relayed and where it transpires. And so when somebody has dementia or they have, say, Alzheimer's or significant memory loss, whatever it is, you might start thinking the hippocampus is what the problem is. Well, your hippocampus requires vitamin A in order to grow brand new nerve cells in the hippocampus. That's what you want if you're starting to diminish in cognitive abilities. It's never too late to try, but what you want to do is you've got to get there ahead of the learning curve or the growth curve. If all you do is wait until your body's completely broken down, well, you're waiting too late. When's the best time? Well, today. And when's the next best time? Well, before you get sick is the best time to start taking care of yourself. That's one of the reasons why if you had cod liver oil, you're providing yourself vitamin A toward the hippocampus. Have you ever heard of that that sheath that covers all the nerves and the neurons in your body? It's called myelin. Well, you can't grow it and repair it and rejuvenate it without omega-3 fatty acids. And so you start seeing people that have the autoimmune disease called multiple sclerosis. They so benefit from just nutrients. This is really a simple concept. You give the cells what they need to function, and guess what they do? They do their job. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open at 903-586-5257. Okay. I think it's a phone line open. There's a green light. I know you can't see it. I can, though. All right. This right here. I like this one a whole bunch. This is the study I'm reading for myself because I think I need to hear this. In the year 2007, there was a study done by a researcher. His name was Kubzanski, K-U-B-Z-A-N-S-K-Y, Kubzanski. I hope I said that right. What he did was, he followed more than 6,000 men and women aged 25 years old all the way up to 74 for 20 years. You can do the math on that. So if you were 74 and you made it 20 years, you're going to be what, 94? Oh, it was a woman. I'm sorry, I said a he. Please forgive me. So Dr. Kubzanski, female, she found that emotional vitality, which is a sense of enthusiasm for life, they had great hopefulness, and they were engaged in life. And they had the ability to face life stresses with emotional balance. This greatly appeared to reduce the risk of coronary heart disease. And the protective effect was distinct and measurable. Even when taking into account such wholesome behaviors as not smoking and getting regular exercise, Kubzansky found that optimism cuts the risk of coronary heart disease in half. Okay? To me, that's interesting. Now, listen to this one right here. In a study of 6,626 participants, researchers at the University of Bordeaux, they found that cardiovascular health in older people was associated with a lower risk of dementia and lower rates of cognitive decline. You know what that says? The healthier your heart is, the lower your risk of having dementia. And you can keep your mind active and sharp, and you can keep working, and you can be productive. Now, the American Heart Association, they recommend that you eat fish, especially those that are rich in the omega-3 fatty acids. Now, catfish and tilapia, to the best of my knowledge, they're not rich in omega-3 fatty acids. But salmon would be, and cod, and halibut, and flounder, and haddock. What else? Sardines. That if you had those fish that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids twice a week, this helps reduce the risk of heart failure, coronary heart disease, cardiac arrest, and the most common type of stroke, which is called an ischemic stroke. Yeah. So that's what they're recommending. You eat fish twice a week. That is brilliant. When you go to the grocery store, just like the lady and I talked about earlier, if you can look for fish that says wild caught, that's probably going to be your best bet. Now, I'm not saying that farm-raised salmon is not good, because I have read some information from some farms where the salmon are raised out in the ocean in a kind of a, well, I guess a pen, for lack of a better word. Very, very good quality. I read this article yesterday. They had a large group of sea lions, you know, like big seals, sea lions, though. They got into the salmon fish farm off the coast. I don't know where it was. It could have been Alaska, for all I know. And they wouldn't leave because it was a free-for-all buffet. And they got free fish. And they couldn't get them out. They were trapped. Isn't that interesting? sea lions aren't dumb. They're super smart, aren't they? Have you ever seen a video on these nature programs of a sea lion swimming under the ocean water? They're like a torpedo. They can turn on a dime. It's amazing. It's almost like a horse that could stop on a dime and spin around a barrel when you're doing a barrel race. Well, sea lions, they're even more incredible than a quarter horse. Okay. Here's another one right here. A recent study from Denmark's Aarhus University, that's spelled A-A-R-H-U-S, they involved, and get this, 10,632 adults born between the years 1890 and 1982. Using medical registries and medical records from all Danish hospitals, they identified adults who were diagnosed between 1963 and the year 2012 with congenital heart disease. These individuals that had heart disease, they had a 60% higher rate of dementia compared to the general population. You already know where I'm going with this. If you do not want to lose the function of your brain, you got to keep your heart in good working order also. So maybe a healthy brain equals a healthy heart, and you can spin that around and say, maybe it's a really healthy heart that leads to a healthy brain, okay? When they looked at the rate of dementia compared to the general population, the risk was 160% higher when compared to those younger than 65 years of age. Well, Previous studies have linked negative emotions, including depression, anxiety, and anger, to a heightened risk of developing heart disease. There's just no way around it. Anger, bitterness, resentment, unforgiveness, anxiety, they all wreak havoc on the heart. I think I've seen so many people die way too soon of a sudden heart attack, and I kind of made the observation that they were highly angry people. Have you ever been around someone that it didn't take much just to set them off? Okay. There are people like that. And, you know, you can't control somebody, but you sure want them to have a good life, and you want them to be blessed. But it's so hard on the heart to harbor bitterness and resentment and anger. You just got to learn to let it go. Just be very forgiving. Now, when it comes to what's called myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, evidence continues to accumulate that if a person develops a major depression following a heart attack, which is actually like a rather common occurrence, they will be consistently threefold risk of increased death. So I would like to think that whatever we do when someone has a heart attack, what can we do to pray for them, to lift them up, to encourage them, to take them some good salmon? That wouldn't be a bad meal, would it? Salmon and broccoli with an avocado. I think I mentioned last week on the radio, one of the greatest ways to improve beneficial microbes in the gut is to eat avocados, because they've been shown to do that. And if you have more good beneficial microbes in your gut, well, guess what you're going to have? You're going to produce a lot greater health. Now remember, your gut is your second brain. This is where all the neurotransmitters are made. And so you need rich, generous production of serotonin. Yes, I have seen people that when they took Prozac or Zoloft, they had a complete turnaround for the better. I've seen amazing results, but not for everybody. But my point is, if you can do something as far as a good beneficial behavior, like if you went for a walk every day, that's been shown to bolster serotonin. If you make sure that you get adequate amounts of protein, which there's a lot of people out there, they don't even come close. And the truth of it is, if you're not getting enough protein from the food that you're eating, like if you're eating chicken or beef or fish that comes from a clean source or eggs, well, you're going to crave carbohydrates. It's just the way it is. I mean, I usually ask the question, how long did it take before your sugar craving died and went away? Well, if you're not getting enough protein, it's probably never going to go away. So if you don't eat protein and fat, what are you going to be consuming more of? Your body's going to have this insatiable craving for carbohydrates and sugar, which I know I don't have time left in the program today, but it's just so catastrophic to the body to consume so much sugar. I think I told a gentleman the other day that out of all the things that I've seen wreck the kidneys, sugar is pretty close. Now, some people, they don't really eat a ton of sugar, but they drink a ton of sugar. Lord willing, I will be back next Saturday. This program is Health Essentials, and you're listening to KBGS FM 90.3, Jacksonville, Tyler, and Longview.